we heed a certain call when the world must come together as one?
There are people dying. Oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all.
We can't go on pretending day by day that someone somewhere will soon make a change.
We all are part of God's great big family.
And the truth, you know, love is all we need.
Alright, welcome back to the second hour of the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, coming to you live from the Valley of the Sun, folks. And I have the pleasure. I've followed this man's work for a long time, and I read his bio off in the last segment of this program because I wanted to give him as much time as I could. We've only got an hour with this man. And I wanted, well, his bio itself, as you know, takes about 10 minutes to read. But with that, it's an absolute pleasure to welcome you to the American Awakening, Dr. Kevin Barrett. Kevin Barrett, how are you, sir?
I'm well, Michael. Thank you so much. I guess I should have sent you the short bio.
No, that's okay. But, you know, I was I sent you an email, Dr. Barrett, and I was watching a Ken O'Keefe speech at an Iran conference, and I noticed as he was giving that speech, I saw you sitting there, and I thought, wow, this guy obviously has boots on the ground or has had in Iran, I don't know how many times, but my programs over the past couple of weeks have been dealing with the saber rattling that's going on and has been, as you know, going on, Dr. Barrett, with the, you know, Iran, demonizing Iran and all of the atrocities they're supposedly doing and the threat that they're, you know, that they have towards Israel, which to me, I don't know what your perspective is, but it gags me with a spoon, my friend. So I would like for you to kind of share with both myself and my audience an overview of Iran. I mean, how much time have you spent over there, Dr. Barrett?
I've been there four times, and each time I kind of stayed about an average of maybe a little under a week. I think once it was a couple of weeks. Getting the visa extension was interesting. I had to stand in line with lots and lots of Iraqis.
Go ahead.
But anyway, yeah, four visits, and I think Ken has been there a couple of times. And it seems like all of the best Western dissidents show up over there at these conferences. So it's kind of ironic that the only place we can have a really good conference and have total free speech and essentially support from at least one segment of the establishment is to have the conference in Tehran. Go figure.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. But I'd like to start this off. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's do this. I'm really interested. I played a clip in the first hour, Dr. Barrett. And it's a very short clip. It's only about 30 or 40 seconds. Did you happen to watch the, I believe it was on March 6th, the AIPAC conference? Did you watch that?
No, I don't quite have a strong enough stomach for that. I mean, I know it happened.
Okay. The news. Well, I've got a pet name for Benjamin Netanyahu. I just call him Beetlebogen because to me the guy's just a Hippocratic idiot. Okay, Hippocratic idiot. But I want to have my engineer play this clip. It's only about 30 seconds, and I'd like for your comment on this clip because I'm real curious as to how much hypocrisy is built into just this small half a minute segment. Dan, if you would go ahead and play clip two again.
As we counter Iran's aggression, we should always remember, the brave people of Iran, their suffering, their hopes, their courage. Women are jailed for removing their hijabs. Students are tortured and shot for advocating freedom. We stand with those in Iran who stand for freedom.
All right, that's enough, Dan. I mean, Dr. Barrett, isn't it amazing how Benjamin Netanyahu stands for those over there who stand for freedom, yet the people in Gaza and the West Bank, the Palestinians, they stand for freedom, and they don't have any problem shooting them in the eye with rubber bullets and torturing them. What is your response to this, sir?
Well, Netanyahu is speaking mainly actually to an American audience, which is kind of strange. You know, normally politicians are mainly trying to talk to the audience that elects them in their own country. But Netanyahu is this weird hybrid creature who spent lots of time in the U.S., partly grew up in the U.S., and he's really a representative of the way that the Zionist state, or Zion, we might call it, it's not just the state of Israel. It's an international state, and every person deemed to have Jewish heritage is supposedly automatically a citizen or potential citizen of this world-straddling superstate. Bibi is this, you know, weird, you know, American who's now mutated in you know, into an Israeli, but he still targets the U.S. And in fact, I think one of the reasons that they let him take charge all these years is that with his experience with the U.S., you know, he speaks American English just like an American. And he can deliver this message that has allowed the Israelis to completely capture our country, starting with their 9/11 false flag operation and the many false flags that have kept up this so-called war on terror, which is really a war on Islam or whatever, but really it's a war on Israel's enemies.
Right.
And so he's telling us what he thinks will convince the American people to go along with his plans for war on Iran. But I think he knows that most Israelis actually don't believe a word of it. They're so used to propaganda anyway that maybe they don't really care. But everybody in the Middle East knows that nobody in the Middle East accepts the legitimacy of the State of Israel. Nobody, whether it's the secularists who don't like the Islamic Republic in Iran, whether it's communists, socialists, the Christians. You know, Mazen Qumsia, the great Christian Palestinian professor, comes on my radio show all the time talking about the genocide that Israel is perpetrating against Palestine. The whole Middle East, with the exception of most Israeli Jews, does not accept the legitimacy of so-called Israel, which is a euphemism for the genocide of Palestine. So when he makes it sound like all these poor, suffering Iranians hate their own government and love us in Israel, that's complete nonsense. Even the Jewish people in Iran hate Israel and like their own government. So this is just total bogus propaganda coming out of Netanyahu. It's par for the course.
Okay, well, a number of things. First of all, let me ask you, how much, if any, validity does he have in saying that women are jailed for taking off their hijabs? Is there anything to that?
Well, the pronunciation is hijab. But
sorry.
Yeah, and there's a dress code there. But it is really barely respected. You know, just like all societies have dress codes about, you know, who can show what. Although maybe we don't anymore. I mean, I've seen the pants slipping down on these hip-hop kids, you know, down pretty much to their ankles. And so technically they're CYA, they're covering their you-know-whats, but they're really not very much. And it's the same thing is true with a lot of Iranian women with these hijabs. Like, you know, I remember being really shocked at the majority, of course, of Iranian women are dressed reasonably modestly, and they show some hair. Technically, the hijab is supposed to cover the hair, but they're usually showing some, a little bit, you know, kind of modestly. But there are a few, you know, kind of done up in the high heels, all dolled up, you know, skin tight, whatever it is they're wearing, the long thing that comes down, you know, like long shirts. And then they're letting their hijabs go as far down their necks as the hip-hop kids let their pants go down to their ankles, if you know what I mean. So there's a social dress code there that we should respect. We have our own dress codes, or maybe we used to, and maybe we should again. But it's not like women are living in terror of being, you know, dragged off to jail every time they show one hair too much. Now, that sort of thing has happened a few times, but it's kind of like saying, you know, in the United States, if somebody runs around wearing nothing but a pair of crotchless underwear in public, they're being tortured and tormented by the evil oppressive government that comes and, you know, tries to get them to cover up. It's the same thing in Iran.
Okay. Well, all right, a couple more things regarding this issue. Number two, the statement he made about students are tortured. I mean, what's up with that? Is it you know, I mean, the students here have been arrested for demonstrating. Not so much if you're one of the, you know, the liberal left, you know, because they actually, you know, sometimes incite it. But students being tortured over in Iran, is there any validity to that at all?
Very, very little. Iran, unlike Israel, does not practice torture as a matter of policy. Israel is the only country in the world, until it took over the United States on 9/11, that practices torture as a matter of national policy. Now, there are some that, despite their hypocritical protestations, are horrible torture centers. Most of those are allied with the United States. The CIA has been offloading torture on all of its allies. Morocco, where I did my PhD on a Fulbright, has a torture center built by the CIA. Now, hopefully it's not really running anymore. It was running right up until about the year 2000. Post 9/11, the CIA shipped people off to be tortured all over the world, even in Syria, of all places, which is now our enemy. They had an agreement with the government there. So torture does happen all over the world. The only place it's legal and official is Israel. And one of the things Israel got out of their 9/11 operation was making torture legal and official here in the United States. But as far as Iran goes, Iran is pretty far down the list of countries where there's a serious torture problem. But like everywhere else, occasionally torture is going to happen. Just like in American jails and prisons, there's undoubtedly vastly more torture going on in American jails and prisons than in Iranian ones. But that's not to say that here and there somebody hasn't gotten tortured in Iran. But it is not their policy. So their human rights record is actually pretty respectable, especially if you consider the fact that they have been under the gun ever since the 1979 revolution freed them from the Shah, that puppet dictator who was installed by the CIA in 1953. Mm-hmm. He had CIA-built torture chambers, just like the ones that were just closing down in Morocco when I was there for the year 1999-2000. So the Shah built tons of torture chambers. The revolution in 1979 overthrew him, brought independence to the people of Iran. And in the immediate aftermath of that revolution, there was a lot of brutality. And that's pretty common. Same thing happened here with our American Revolution. It was even worse with the French Revolution and the Russian Revolution. Revolutions devour their children. There is always going to be immense suffering and brutality during and shortly after revolutions. In Iran, it got even worse because of the U.S.-imposed war in which Iraq, Saddam Hussein's Iraq, was laden with chemical weapons and pushed into invading Iran on behalf of the West. And so that war throughout the 1980s was hideous. The Iranian people suffered horribly. They got just drowned in chemical weapons that Rumsfeld had sold to Saddam. And so they were in tough straits. And in that kind of situation, you know, dealing with internal and external enemies can be fairly brutal sometimes. But all of that said, since then, in particular, you know, in this course of evolution since the revolution in 1979, Iran has maintained a pretty good human rights record, considering the extent to which it's totally under the gun. It's the victim of terrorism. 19,000 Iranians murdered by U.S.-supported terrorism. The Mujahideen al-Khalq, a radical communist group that mass murders innocent Iranians in bombings, it's totally supported by American taxpayers and always has been. So given the threat that they're under there, where there really is a terror problem, unlike here, they're very kind and gentle and respectful of human rights.
Okay, well, let's touch for just a moment, because we know that this saber rattling that's been going on throughout, and you're right, you know, Zionism is a worldwide entity. It's not just Israel, because I did stomach watching Nikki Haley and Benjamin Netanyahu at that AIPAC conference, and I have to tell you, I have never seen so much butt-kissing by our alleged leaders anywhere on the planet. But this whole magnification, Dr. Barrett, that they're making out of this nuclear threat, and Iran's going to have a bomb next week, and they've been saying that as long as I've been a talk show host, which has been since 2006. And by the way, I want to interject here. Your friend Jim Fetzer, my friend Jim Fetzer, he was cordial enough. He was the guy, when I was scared to death when I did my first show on KFNX here in Phoenix, I met Jim at a conference out in Los Angeles for 9/11 Truth, and Jim was cordial enough to come on and hold my hand during the first show. So that's how I know Jim. Anyway, and I've known him for years.
Well, that's amazing. What a coincidence, because that's how I got started in talk radio. Was Jim had a show with RBN, and he turned the show over to me, and I had fun and talked to John Stadtmiller, and next thing you know, I had my own show on RBN, and I've been doing radio ever since. That was 2006, by the way.
Really? Well, okay. That was shortly thereafter when I came to RBN, and I've been here on and off for the last 12 years. So that said, I wanted to touch a little bit, Dr. Barrett, on this, you know, the saber rattling that, you know, Iran's going to have a bomb next week. It is my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the Iranian religion, they're a theocratic society. they don't even believe in nuclear weapons. They think it's evil and satanic. Am I right in that?
Well, that's the edict coming down from both the founder of the Islamic Republic, the Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, and the current supreme leader as well. So that's the official policy coming down from the top. And you have to remember that Iran is a very, very diverse place in terms of its power centers. It is the furthest thing you could ever imagine from an autocracy or a dictatorship. There are groups of clergy who have power, and they have radically different views about all sorts of things. And then there are also very wealthy people who have power, and you know they have their own agenda. There are populist movements. So all of this kind of gets worked out through what's really a democratic process. In a sense, Iran is a complete democracy. Even the supreme leader, who's always called a dictator, and even though a lot of, I'm not sure anybody even listens to him as much as they should, probably, but he is elected by people who are elected by the voters. So it's one step removed from direct democracy in terms of electing the supreme leader, and then the entire Iranian government is elected. There's a president, there's a parliament, they're all elected. So what's the nuclear weapons policy? Well, as I said, the official policy by the top leaders is nuclear weapons are haram or religiously forbidden because they kill so many innocents. And killing even one innocent is absolutely haram in Islam. Now, naturally, since Muslims have to live on an imperfect planet with everyone else, they haven't practiced that perfectly, and they probably couldn't survive if they did, but they try, at least the good ones do. And so that's the policy in Iran. There might very well be hard-nosed real politic types over there, and they would be the less religious types, in my view, who would say, you know, we maybe need nuclear weapons because if you don't have them, look what happens to, you know, Iraq, look what happens to Libya, look what happens to Syria. You know, North Korea has them and they've survived, so maybe we should get some. That's a pragmatic view, and it would be the secular, non-religious people who would tend to have that view in Iran. The religious establishment, which is the main target of the Western war on Iran, actually doesn't want nuclear weapons. So that's another irony that most people never see.
Okay. And so the motivation, in your view, the motivation by the West, by this, you know, Zionist-controlled mechanism, who obviously it is the tail wagging the dog. There's no question about that. Israel is the tail that is wagging the American dog. The motivations for all of this saber-rattling, why would they want to go in like they did in Iraq and destroy what I deem to be, I've seen pictures of Iran, I've seen beautiful pictures of the countryside, of the artifacts, of the culture, of the people, beautiful people over there. Why would they want to go in and destroy that? What's their motivation, Dr. Barrett?
Well, it's pretty straightforward. You know, I've talked to people over there who are very well informed, and some of them who are pretty high up in the system, and they've told me, you know, Kevin, we could be the economic and technological powerhouse of the Middle East with the complete support of the West. All we would have to do is kowtow to Israel. But we won't do that because it's not right. You know, our view of religion, you know, we're Shia Muslims for the most part, and we believe in standing up for what's right and standing up for the underdog. And the Palestinians are the underdog. So we're going to keep supporting them even if they kill us. And so that's what it really comes down to, is Iran is providing not so much military support, although that's part of it. They do provide some military support to Palestinian resistance groups, especially Hezbollah, which, of course, isn't Palestinian, they're Lebanese, but they're fighting against Israeli occupation. Mm-hmm. But they also, more importantly, I think, Iran is the only country in the region whose government is independent enough that their government can say what all of the people in the entire region, the entire Middle East, believe, which is that Israel is not a legitimate state. It needs to go. Palestine needs to be liberated. This is what everybody thinks. You know, even the ones who've sort of knuckled under, you know, the cowards who've, you know, sold out and so on, they might not say that right away. But if you loosen them up a little bit, they would say, yeah, that's it. In an ideal world, that's what I would want. So essentially, everybody in the Middle East wants that. Nobody's allowed to say it if they have power, because the Israelis in the West dominate the power centers in the Middle East, except in Tehran.
All right, well, Dr. Barrett, we've got to take a break, and then there's a short segment coming up after this. I have a number of questions that I want to bring forth here, so stick around. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Michael Herzog, the American Awakening. Sun with my special guest, Dr. Kevin Barrett. Be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Well, it's all right, riding around in the breeze. Well, it's all right, if you live the life you please. Well, it's all right, doing the best you can. Well, it's all right, as long as you lend a hand.
All right, folks, we're back with the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, with my special guest, Dr. Kevin Barrett. And Dr. Kevin Barrett's lending a hand. Dr. Barrett, getting back to this thing, what it boils down to is the fact, and Ken O'Keefe mentioned this in the speech that I watched where I saw you sitting there, Ken O'Keefe mentioned if our Western government had 10% of the integrity that the people, the leadership of Iran did, okay, it would be a different world. So what it boils down to really is the decision made with the Iranian government to stand with the Palestinians is on morals, ethics, values. It's on right versus wrong, right?
That's absolutely correct, yeah. And you can criticize the government of Iran in various respects. They are, I think, relatively honest and non-corrupt, and in fact pretty idealistic at the highest levels, especially the supreme leader and his advisors, and then down as you know, further down you go, the more likely you might find corruption or abuse. But compared to the rest of the region, it's really, really good. And overall, I think they are a model for what a moderate, religiously based society should look like. My good friend E. Michael Jones, who is a very hardcore Catholic, to say the least, he's been, you know, I've met him over there, and I've been over there with him, I think, three times. He would like the United States to be a lot more like Iran. He found what looks like a model to him over there. He thinks that having a democratic system, pluralism, all sorts of different groups are represented in the government and get to a certain extent have their run their own show, but where there is a kind of consensus on the importance of the sacred of religion, and that creates a kind of a metaphysical basis for morality. He finds that really appealing. And I honestly, I do too. You know, I don't think every society should look exactly like Iran, far from it. But I do think that since the French Revolution and the destruction of religion, the 19th century, when the elites in the West completely lost their Christianity, we've had the world colonized by these powerful empires that are dedicated to wiping out traditional religion. And it's been a disaster, in my view. So I think that in that sense, Iran that's been able to actually integrate a system that does keep religion alive in the public sphere, but in a moderate and reasonable way, certainly not what we've had in Saudi Arabia, for example, or Israel, for that matter. This is actually a model for the world. So I think in a lot of ways, even though some of the details aren't transferable and there are problems in Iran, but the general idea of a democratic republic with a religious basis, I think, is the wave of the future.
Fascinating. Well, let me ask you, George W. Bush put Iran on his axis of evil, and of course, that axis of evil just happened to coincidentally be countries that don't have a central bank in there. But also General Wesley Clark, when he went into the Pentagon and one of his cohorts came out and said there's seven countries on the list and Iran was one of them. These countries are on the list primarily, and again, Ken O'Keefe, I have to bring him up. What he mentioned is there's one problem that could be solved tomorrow, and that is if we got rid of the Federal Reserve, and if Trump signed in a resolution or an executive order or whatever, and we started issuing United States notes again, this entire problem would go away because they wouldn't have the money to keep foisting these wars upon the populace of the Middle East. Would you agree to that?
Absolutely. I think Ken is right about that. I just translated a 500-page scholarly book called From Yahweh to Zion by a French historian named Laurent Guyonneau. And it has a tremendous section dealing with the origin of the two world wars, and as well as a very good section on 9/11, which started what you could call the Third World War, this so-called clash of civilizations or war on terror. And all of those three clearly have been ginned up by Zionist banksters, you know, people who've gotten control of the issuance of currency and are using usury as their prime weapon of war to try to conquer the whole world, as John Perkins says in Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Yeah. Okay, I'll tell you what, we got to go to a long break now, Kevin. We'll be back in about 4 or 5 minutes. Stick around, more to come with Dr. Kevin Barrett, folks. Be right back. Hope you're enjoying this as much as I am.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Do you worry a lot? If you're forgetful, nervous, moody, or overwhelmed, chances are you're not protecting yourself from the ravaging effects of stress and anxiety. No matter the cause, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, your quality of life, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in as little as 1 to 2 weeks and increase your ability to recall facts, names, and numbers in 4 to 12 weeks. Calm and Clever was created by scientist Kurt Hendricks, a principal investigator in 2 NIH-funded studies on Alzheimer's disease. Try Calm and Clever for 2 months. You'll feel the difference. Call 1-800-758-8746 or go to calmandclever.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
All right, folks, we're back with the American Awakening, myself and my special guest, Dr. Kevin Barrett, which I'm so honored to have on my program. Dr. Barrett, you know, we've been watching systematically since 2001 these countries being taken off the list. And right now, Syria is in a civil war that was literally agitated by our own CIA, in my opinion. And we have, you know, Israel has been launching sorties into Syria. The United States has been over in Syria and is and has a certain amount of land grab there. Iran is, or are they, giving any assistance as an ally to Syria regarding any weaponry? Do you know?
Well, yeah, Iran, along with Russia, has been supporting the Syrian government in this war. And, you know, some call it a civil war. It certainly has a dimension of being a civil war. But I think it's really more of an orchestrated attempt to take down Syria as one of those 7 countries in 5 years that were targeted right by the 9/11 operation. And so, yeah, Iran, of course, has rallied to the defense of Syria. Iran's allies, Hezbollah, have also fought for the Syrian government against these combination of mercenaries and sort of Syrian revolutionaries trying to overthrow that government. And yeah, so Iran and Russia have largely won this war. And it seems like the Americans, the Israelis, the Saudis are at this point just trying to drag it out and spread the chaos. But there are a lot of fears that they may escalate. And this could lead to a shooting war, not only with Iran, but also with Russia.
Right. Yeah. So in other words, the short of it is that Iran and the United States don't want to take their football and go home yet. Right.
Well, they've lost, but they don't want to admit it. And plus, the real reason for this wasn't so much just to really try to get regime change. You know, Michael, nobody ever imagined that this Iraq war was really going to produce a democracy. That was all BS. The real story about this is that Israel wanted to destroy these seven countries that were targeted. And destroy means not turn them into democracies. It means just wipe them out, you know, take them back, if not to the Stone Age, at least halfway there, wipe out their technology. Mossad's assassins have murdered thousands of Iraqi scientists, leaving Iraq without much of a scientific capability anymore. It used to be one of the most powerful technological nations in the region. And so they've destroyed Syria, too, and they just want to keep the destruction going. They don't want peace to break out. They don't want the full end game to happen. So that's why they're still over there stirring things up, threatening chemical weapons, false flags, and so on.
And the same chemical weapons when they used white phosphorus, which is a chemical weapon of mass destruction, against the Palestinian people. Yet, you know, we don't hear anything about that in Western media, for good reason, because we have to continually keep the dumbed-down, mind-numbed Americans thinking that, you know, well, we have to protect Israel. My question is why. But, you know, in saying that, and I want to kind of take a trip down memory lane with you, because I know your studies are vast and you have a very, very knowledgeable view of a lot of this, you know, on world geopolitics. So I wanted to ask you, let's go back to the overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, and we were told over here that, you know, it was human rights violations and he was killing his own people. Same thing we're being told about, you know, Bashar al-Assad. So from what my understanding, Dr. Barrett, is that in Libya, Muammar Gaddafi was making deals with the heads of state in all the African countries to not only trade gold with the African dinar, but he also nixed a $2 billion contract with Bechtel. He nixed $14 billion worth of contracts with French Prime Minister Sarkozy. And he was literally trying to make deals with the leaders of African nations to make Africa into a first world country, which was going on in Libya. Am I off base there?
No, that's absolutely right. We know why he was murdered and his country was destroyed. Hillary Clinton admitted it in her emails back and forth with her advisor, Sid Blumenthal. The real problem with Gaddafi was that he was undermining the establishment currency, the Rothschild petrodollar, the European currency in particular, which is also backed by the Rothschild funny money syndicate. And Gaddafi was going to create real money. He had a huge gold reserves, and he was going to get the whole region behind a gold-backed dinar. And so that would have been currency actually backed up by something, unlike Rothschild toilet paper money that we've all been brainwashed into accepting for the last century. And that would threaten the whole global currency system. So they murdered him and destroyed his country.
So it's key bono, follow the money. And it all goes back to, had he succeeded in doing so? And by the way, I did a report on him last year, Dr. Barrett, and it looked to me like not only was Libya a first world country, but he was nothing the tyrant that they painted him to be, because gas was 13 cents a gallon. If you wanted to be a farmer over there, they would supply you, their government would supply you with the implements, the farm tools, the feed, the grass, all of it. If you you had health care, if you couldn't be treated there, they would fly you anywhere in the world. Their loans were interest free. And now, does that sound like a terrorist country to you with a maniac running it?
Well, as countries in that region go, it was certainly pretty well run, especially from the point of view of most native Libyans. And even the guest workers in Libya were treated a lot better than guest workers in places like Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and in many other places. So it was not a badly run country. Now, there were people who had a different view from Gaddafi, just like everywhere, Michael. I'm sure you have noticed that political factions and disputes break out for whatever reason, everywhere on Earth. And so there are going to be people everywhere that oppose whoever's in power. And some of the people who opposed Gaddafi, these people tended to be Salafi-type Muslims, some of them sort of, you know, Wahhabi-ish and Al-Qaeda fanatical types, who, of course, are nurtured by our own CIA. Some of those people in eastern Libya were the main opposition to Gaddafi, and Gaddafi's people did actually arrest and torture some of these opponents of their government. So he wasn't the absolute clean, you know, Mr. Clean on human rights, but given the realities of how governments everywhere operate, it was actually a government that was probably treating its people better than almost any other government on Earth, and that was his real crime. He was not overthrown and murdered because Hillary Clinton thought that he was a nasty human rights abuser. Of course, she's a much worse human rights abuser than he ever was.
Don't even get me started on her, buddy.
Right. No, she had him killed and had the country destroyed because of the good things that he was doing.
Well, I watched the clip when they were dragging him through and he was bloody and beaten. And from what I understand, he was both sodomized, shot in the head. And, you know, they're claiming these humanitarian rights violations, and their solution to the problem is to send NATO in there along with France, and rumor has it that American pilots were flying those French planes, and just kill and maim, you know, and bomb thousands and thousands of Libyans to protect them, to save them from this tyrannic dictator. Now, they went in there on these humanitarian causes, Dr. Barrett, and they turn around and do the same thing that they're accusing him of doing. How does that work?
Well, yeah, it's doublethink. You know, we're living in a world that would have George Orwell spinning in his grave if he could see a fraction of what's going on today. Yeah, the whole supposed human rights crisis in Libya, where, you know, the official story in our media was that there was a green revolution going on there, and the Arab Spring was breaking out, and these peaceful demonstrators were all about to be mowed down by a whole army of Gaddafi thugs. And it was all complete BS. There was no such situation at all. It was just invented out of nothing. And that was the excuse they used to bomb the heck out of the country on behalf of human rights and democracy. Well, that's what they always say. In this case, it was really to prop up the Rothschild petrodollar.
So in the end game, that's what this is all about. The seven countries in 5 years are the countries that oppose having a central bank. And let's talk about the BRICS Nations Agreement. There's five countries that are involved in the BRICS Nations Agreement that have opted out of the central banking system. Okay, how's that working out economically, and what effect in your mind has it had on, you know, the economy here in the United States or elsewhere?
Well, the move away from the Western central banks and the U.S. dollar as the global reserve currency is the big kind of fault line, this tectonic plate movement that's changing the world. But it's changing the world slowly, because if that fault line suddenly slips and there's a massive financial earthquake, then everybody goes down. So the Chinese, for example, cannot just dump all of their dollar holdings at once, or they would kill the dollar, but they would also kill the American goose that lays the golden eggs. The whole planet would go into a recession, including China. So the trick for the Chinese and other international forces that hold U.S. dollars is to figure out how to get rid of these worthless toilet paper Rothschild petrodollars, which are not backed by anything. You know, the U.S. has this massive debt. We're producing very little, and we're consuming a whole lot. All we really produce is a military machine capable of inflicting mass death on the world. So the other countries are trying to sneak out from under this worthless dollar that we're forcing them to take at gunpoint. But they can't do it all at once, because they do it all at once, number one, we'll murder them and blow them up and destroy their country. And number two, even if we didn't, the ensuing economic crunch would destroy their country too. So they have to slowly shift the currency system out of dollars into a more sort of multilateral basket of currencies system, or what have you. And so that's the big engine that's driving the geopolitical changes we're seeing.
Well, so that said, is it theoretically possible, as Ken O'Keefe mentioned in that speech you attended, and by the way, when was that? Was that this year, last year? When was that?
Well, yeah, I think you saw the one that he did. He self-recorded. I was there while he was doing this. The main portion of it that I remember, he filmed himself while we were walking around at the Shah's former palace. And that was the first time I was in Iran, which I think was 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay. All right, so yeah, I've noticed. I've watched several clips on him, and you, for that matter. I've seen many clips of you, you know, regarding 9/11 and so forth. And I'm really fascinated with your work. I've done a lot of due diligence as an investigator into 9/11, come up with the conclusions that I shared with you off the air, and I'm happy for you to affirm that I'm right. It lets me know that I'm doing something right. But theoretically, Dr. Barrett, is it possible from what he said? I know we did JFK did this in 1962, I believe, when he directed United States Treasury to start printing United States notes. Is it theoretically possible to do that and just exchange everybody's money with United States notes and tell the bankers to go bye-bye, or is that not possible?
It's theoretically completely possible. We would just have to have the will to do it. We would have to have decent intel compared to their intel. And that's one of the problems. The bankers have always been able to buy the best intel. You know, Rothschild built his fortune by knowing that Napoleon had lost before everybody else did. And so he bought everything up for a dime on the dollar on the British exchange. Mm-hmm. And the Rothschilds have always hired really good intel people, ruthless, probably psychopathic in many cases, very high IQ, very sharp people. And then those people keep an eye on the whole world. And if they know that we're coming to get them, you know, they can figure out how to stop us. So we need to spread the word that this needs to be done. And then we need to make sure that smart people using good strategic approaches with good intel are able to corner these guys and grab them and get the goods on them and get their goods. And then we need to create public currency systems. You know, a lot of gold bugs and libertarians say we should just let precious metals be the currency. Let anybody create their own currency as long as it's fully backed. Yeah, I think there should be that. But we should also have national public currencies. The U.S. dollar is supposed to be created by the Treasury Department. That's constitutional currency. And that would work wonderfully. We wouldn't have to even lend most of it into existence. It could be issued directly. The government could just pay for what it does directly, and it wouldn't have to borrow massive sums from the private banksters at compound interest. You know, more than 30% of every dollar that we spend, all of our wealth, 30% of our wealth is stolen from us by these parasitical banksters in the form of compound interest. No reason for that. Governments shouldn't be in debt. Governments create the currency. There's no reason for one penny of any government debt anywhere. So we need to get the private banksters out of the currency creation business.
Fascinating. I love your overview of that. Now, we're running out of time. We only got probably about 7 or 8 minutes left, and I didn't want to let you get away today before I brought up the topic. And I'm sure you're familiar with BDS, right? Boycott.
Oh, yeah. Well, oh, yeah. I'm not a card-carrying member, but yeah, I'm...
No, but I was curious from your perspective, you know, in boycotting Israel, which, you know, they're putting pressure and, you know, lobbying for legislation against boycotting Israel, and which it really affects our First Amendment rights. And I'm curious from your point of view, how much headway is being made in this movement as far as boycotting Israel? Because it seems to be putting some heat on the Israeli government. And that, you know, there's a number of football players that took a knee, not for Black Lives Matter, but they actually took it. Michael Bennett of the Seattle Seahawks took it over this Palestinian situation. And also there was I believe she was from either Switzerland or New Zealand. There was a singer, professional singer, star that refused to go to Israel over this. So I was just curious from your point of view, what kind of momentum is being, you know, is growing over this whole BDS movement, do you know?
Oh yeah, it's definitely a major threat to the Israelis, and it is growing, and that's why they're lashing out with these countermeasures, like trying to criminalize it here in the United States. You may remember that they tried to force people who were going to get their government flood insurance in Houston after the hurricane. They had to promise they would never boycott Israel or they wouldn't get their money to clean up. And that's just one example of how they're really trying to prevent us from doing this. And it's an obvious violation of the First Amendment. But the Israelis, they're the chosenites. They think that they don't have to respect the same rules that everybody else does. So if we, you know, boycott them, we're evil anti-Semites. And if we criticize them, we are doing hate speech. You know, you can criticize anybody else. I criticize the Saudi regime at least as harshly as I criticize the Israeli regime, and never once have I been called names or gotten major pushback from that. But With regard to my criticisms of the Israelis, my goodness, they've come after me big time, and on a pretty much permanent basis. You're just not allowed to criticize them because they're God's chosen, and they think they're above everybody else. And so the BDS movement, which is parallel to what was done with South Africa a couple of decades ago and was very successful, is a huge threat to this brutal genocide that they're conducting. Because that's really what it is. They're utterly destroying Palestine and the Palestinian people bit by bit. They're ethnically cleansing Jerusalem. They're bulldozing people's houses. They're murdering people. Israeli troops regularly sport shoot kids for fun. We've got horrific eyewitness reports from very, very credible people. In fact, you know, innumerable credible people. Chris Hedges, the great journalist, is one of them, who watched Israelis luring kids within range of their guns and mowing them down, killing them for sport. He said he'd never seen that in any other war zone. This was a new one for him. So this is a really, really brutal situation, and they lie and tell us it's a kind, generous, human rights respecting democracy. BS. And people are gradually waking up, and the BDS movement may actually change things.
All right. We've got to take a break. We'll be back and speak to my special guest, Dr. Kevin Barrett. Final segment coming up. Stick around, folks. I hope you're enjoying this.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month, and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space.
All right, folks, we're back. Final segment of the American Awakening with my special guest, Dr. Kevin Barrett. in the short time that we have left, Dr. Barrett, I want to just get your opinion or your perspective on this. No nation on earth is supposed to support financially or in any other way any member nation that has nuclear weapons that is not a member of the Nuclear Proliferation Treaty. Israel is a non-member. Iran doesn't even have a nuclear weapon, which Israel wants to wipe off the map, yet they're not in the Nuclear Proliferation Treaty because they don't have a nuclear weapon. So how does it work, and how much power does the United Nations really have that Israel is not a member, doesn't plan on becoming a member yet, and the United States support them to the tune of $10 to $20 million a day being sent over there, all right, and we are violating the Nuclear Proliferation Treaty by sending them one nickel. How does that work? And, you know, is there any control there at all, Dr. Barrett?
Well, like I was saying, there are two sets of rules, one set for the Zionists and one set for everybody else. And, yeah, they have a big nuclear weapons program that they traditionally would never neither confirm nor deny. But Mordecai Vanunu revealed to the world the extent of this program. And yet the Israelis, who went to great lengths to get that nuclear arsenal and become the only country with nuclear weapons in the region. By great lengths, I'm partly referring to the JFK assassination. Michael Collins Piper has been largely borne out by further research in his book Final Judgment, which describes how the Israelis were certainly a prime force behind the coup d'etat that overthrew and murdered President John F. Kennedy. And the book by Guyenot that I mentioned earlier, From Yahweh to Zion, goes into that and I think tells that story beautifully. So, yeah, they are beyond hypocrisy here. You know, Israel essentially is driven by this kind of psychotic, paranoid state. They think that everybody's out to get them. Everybody is going to drive them into the sea. And so they have the right to do anything to defend themselves. They must be vastly more ruthless than anybody else. And then they're exempt from the rules that govern everybody else's behavior. That's their whole philosophy of life. And so they've got nuclear weapons pointed at all of the capitals of Europe, all of the capitals of the Middle East. And yet they are so afraid of Iran simply stating the views of the virtually unanimous population of the region that Israel is not legitimate, and supporting the forces that will eventually force Israel to become a country for all its people, not just the Jewish supremacists who now govern that apartheid state that's committing genocide against the Untermenschen, the Palestinians. This is I think we're in the final stages here because people are waking up. You know, Jewish Americans who have been the mainstay of support for Israel historically are starting to wake up. The younger Jewish Americans in particular are suddenly realizing that there is this immense contradiction between the humane values that they're taught and then what's actually happening over in Israel. So,
I think you left one thing out. They've probably got some of those nukes pointed at Washington, D.C., because our buddies almost sunk the USS Liberty. Thank you so much, Dr. Barrett, for spending an hour with me. I would love to have you back up again at a future date and talk about a different topic, Kevin. Thank you so much.
Sounds good. Thanks, Michael.
All right, bye for now, folks. Back tomorrow with Rudy Davis and Henry Mackow, first and second hour. Yeah, and see you tomorrow.
A price, and I'll keep paying. I'm not ready to make nice. I'm not ready to back down. I'm still mad as hell, and I don't have time to go round and round and round. It's too late to make it right. I probably wouldn't if I could, 'cause I'm mad as hell. Can't bring myself to do what it is.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. you need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.